Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to a slightly different episode. I hope this is something that people can just put on in the background while they're doing other work or, you know, outfitting a boat or something and just listen to. This is going to be an interview between myself and a lovely chap called Simon, who has some great opinions about all sorts of things kayaking related. We are just going to ramble off. Quick note, the audio is definitely quite one-sided. Simon's is a lot louder than my own in this interview. Please forgive me that. I really hope that it's still worth watching, worth listening to, and that you can still pick up what's going on. I tried to alter it as best as I could when editing, but there's only so much I could do. Hopefully it's still of value to people. This is a bit of a test for me, and if this is something that people enjoy, then I would hope to do some more of them. So let me know if you really enjoy this. Without further ado, let's get in to the interview.
Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming Simon onto the channel. We're going to do a little interview, Q&A, chat. I originally had the idea of calling this Riverside Rambles, and you know, had the really optimistic idea that this would end up being filmed on some picturesque riverbank somewhere with a nice little stream burbling in the background and, you know, a couple of deck chairs and some beers or something. We're in the slightly less glamorous situation of talking across the airwaves. But yes, welcome, Simon.
Hello. I'm glad to be here. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good. Well, yeah, very glad to have you on. Whereabouts in the world are you, Simon? And what's your paddling background, just to bring people kind of up to speed?
Okay, so I'm in this whitewater mecca known as Wolverhampton in the West Midlands. And we've got so much whitewater here. It's just incredible. And I've been paddling since I came to paddling pretty late in life. So I had to teach myself to swim in order to begin paddling in the first place. So I'm not a natural water person at all. I really had to work to be able to go boating. But it basically came to a point in my life where I thought back to those television programs on the BBC. For those in other countries, you might not know, but in the UK, we used to have a program called Paddles Up, which was a kind of slalom-based thing. It was quite twee, but it was great. And I, as a young kid, I used to really love watching it. And I was always jealous of people being able to paddle their whitewater boats. So I got to near my mid-30s, and I decided if I don't start to learn to kayak now and get over my fears of the water, I'm never going to do it. So I just embarked on a thing to try and get myself water confident, and then I began kayaking. So
Wow, and now here I am. Phenomenal. So you say, you know, Wolverhampton, not a whitewater mecca in itself. Where's your go-to?
Okay, so we have some small rapids on the River Severn, which I can go to on the weekday, and you know, that's great for like hot, warm summer evening sort of practice. But it's about an hour and a half for me to get to the Dee in Wales, and that sort of area. So it's not too bad for me to get to places like that. And the same for HBP, you know, Home Pier Point, such like. So those are my regular kind of spots for day-to-day paddling and mucking around. And it's been great because on the Dee recently, the wave has been at an absolutely awesome height since last October due to all this rain. It's been really good. So.
I think we've, for those that, you know, are not UK-based watchers, listeners, we have had a phenomenal winter in terms of water this year. I think it hasn't stopped raining since about mid-October, and we're now in early April. I think maybe the sun is finally beginning to think about showing its face, but it has been a very long, grey, wet, very windy winter, and that has been a positive thing.
it's been great, but strangely, as a kayaker, I should be hoping for rain all the time, but I'm starting to look forward to those really nice warm summer evenings.
And I think you don't realize how much it affects your sanity not having any blue sky above you for months at a time until you've been in it for 5 months. But no, it's been phenomenal, hasn't it? Very cool. There's something very exciting behind you that I feel like we can't pass up talking about. So I was gonna ask you the question, what's the newest boat in your quiver, and hope that might lead on to this, but apparently you've already set me up here. So what are we looking at here?
Okay, what we're looking at here is a Hobson Kayaks Rockstar 5, and yeah, it's beautiful. It's not as colourful as it was supposed to be. I made a bit of I messed up the order on this thing called Board Lambs, which is a printed fiberglass thing which allows full colour. Right. I ordered the wrong one. But it's actually come out looking probably a lot more badass than it was originally going to look.
It looks really cool.
If you look very closely at the back, at the tail, you can see the patterns.
Oh, right. Oh, so it's patterned as well as carbon.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not. Wow. It looks like it's just carbon, but you actually look closely, and there's this really cool effect where you get you got the carbon mixed with this abstract pattern.
Oh, amazing! Below. Oh, very cool. Oh well, maybe if you send me a couple of pictures, I can insert.
Yeah, it shows up better in sunshine, but
which, as we said, we've had precious little of. Okay. So why a carbon boat?
Okay, so it is an indulgence. I will admit that right off the bat. It is an indulgence.
It's all right, it's an indulgence. I can forgive. I've done the same.
But you know, I'm not new to composite boats. I've had a couple of composite slalom boats in carbon. I have a carbon surf boat as well. And I like the feel of paddling a composite boat.
Yes.
So, you know, there are certain traits to them that are very, very different to paddling a plastic boat.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not a top level freestyler by any stretch of the imagination, not at all. I spend most of my time on flat water. And the simple fact is, a carbon boat is much lighter to throw around. You can keep going for much longer.
Yeah.
In a carbon boat, the difference in weight between that and the plastic one is just huge.
Yeah,
it's just massive.
The difference of therefore carrying it from and to the water. Yes, I fully sympathize
with
that.
And previously, my Gigi, my plastic Gigi, the XO1, I fitted the carbon and the foam, the carbon outfitting and the foam seat in it. And that makes a big difference to that. You know, it makes it so much lighter. And then previous to that, I seem to have this history of making my playboat as light as possible. Previous to that, I had a Jitsu, which I ripped out all of that heavy Daggerurgo outfitting, and I replaced it all with my own. I made my own outfitting. I put a Gigi seat in it. And it's kind of influenced by, and I'm going to absolutely butcher a name because I can't remember. When I was out in Uganda, Adrian Levkinect was there, and she had a Jitsu and completely made reproduced the entire Dagger outfitting in carbon.
Whoa.
in her Jitsu. And I just took one look at it and thought, I want that. I couldn't have that because I couldn't do that. So I just ended up with this Heath Robinson sort of thing with my foam that I'd used a shaper on and all the rest
amazing.
Of it. But it did the trick.
Absolutely amazing. Wow. Yeah. Very cool. Very, very cool.
But
so
yeah. Sorry.
For the average paddler then, would you say carbon is worth it?
No. No, I mean they're pricey, and you know, unless you have a specific reason, you know, I know this is an indulgence, but I do a lot of flat water and I do feel the difference in how light a boat is.
Yeah.
I'm doing that, and if I'm trying to practice moves repeatedly, you know, it does make a difference. But for most normal people, it's not. If you were getting into surf kayaking, Yeah, I could highly recommend a carbon boat. You can buy a used one quite easily. Same for slalom. I wouldn't want to use a plastic slalom boat at all. So, you know, in those instances where you've got a specific reason, then yeah, composites is worth it. But if you're, you know, dabbling in freestyle, or you're paddling, particularly if you're paddling rivers for your play boating, I wouldn't, you know, unless you've got lots of water, I wouldn't recommend.
Yeah. We do not live carbon on the Ottawa in the UK, do we?
No. But by the same token, the people that I come across, they found out that I've got this boat, they're like, just use it, just get it out of the river. Yeah. You see EJ just chuck his boat across the car park, they're tougher than you think. I mean, yes. I won't be doing that with that, but they are tougher than you think they are.
Oh no, they're very tough for sure. Like, you know, my carbon gigi, I would take that out on high water days on the loop. Some of the waves on the loop are phenomenal in a play boat. So on high water days, I would take that out on there, and no fear if it did hit a rock. And I've also surfed it at Lynmouth a few times and landed pretty heavily on some rocks, and it was fine. I wouldn't want to do it repeatedly, but yes. However, as you say, so I've literally just sold my Gigi. I've just moved away from the carbon boat in favor of, I've downsized my fleet down from three boats to two, and kind of combined my two play boats into one full slice plastic. I've gone to a Nova, Dagger Nova.
Okay.
And I took the Nova out in some fair mid-sized surf, sort of 4 to 5 feet of surf the other day.
That's pretty chunky.
And I found that I could throw every move that I could throw in the Gigi in a Nova. And arguably, I'd say my air screws were better.
That's interesting.
But that might just be me rose tinting it, because I haven't actually paddled the Gigi in surf for at least 4 months. And so, the memory's hazy.
Maybe carbon Nova.
Oh, don't tempt me, Frodo. I'm just intrigued. I think, because I fully agree, at the time when I bought my carbon boat, I think I had lots of the same reasons that you've just shared. Doing a lot of flat water, but also not feeling, I have never been a high level competitive freestyle paddler. I started producing tutorial videos about it through lockdown because it kept me sane. And I happened to have access to a lot of local flat water, and I was out on it all the time. And so I suppose that lent a certain degree of expertise. But a high level freestyle paddler, I am not. So I sympathize with the reasoning, and I think I'd probably agree, actually. Anyone who has a valid reason and is like, you know what, this money's just burning a hole in my pocket, I'm gonna, I think a carbon boat is probably a sensible choice. And especially if you're somewhere in the UK where you've got access to good surf, but you're not into getting a surf boat, and you just want to progress your big volume paddling and your play boating, there's no better environment for that than surf, and a carbon boat will definitely teach you things. Some of them might not be lessons you want to learn, like how big is too big of a wave to try and get out of. I mean, that could happen in any boat, couldn't it? So
I have to say I do think you're doing yourself down in terms of your freestyle ability. I've seen you freestyling, and it's pretty impressive, I would say. But you're right, particularly the surf is absolutely a fantastic place for anyone to go. I just have to put that in there as well.
Of course.
I know a lot of people get turned off by it. They stick with the rivers. And if an opportunity to go out and the surf comes along, they're like, I don't know if it's my thing. But I would recommend anyone go out, even if you're not surfing, even if it's just going out through through the breaks.
Nothing builds a stronger booth.
Yeah.
And nothing builds your resilience for big water better, I think, for big volume than going out in some chunky, probably slightly dumpy, messy surf. Teaches you to hold on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of these people. I'm freaked out by big volume stuff. Mm. So
I think it's probably true of a lot of UK paddlers. We don't have access to it, so it makes sense that it kind of scares. You know, we have high water.
Yeah,
but it's high water on low volume rivers and creeks. We don't have those quarter mile wide, humongous sections that you get in North America and Canada. And, so yes, fully sympathise.
And it's I'd like to get out on the surf a lot more. And I used to spend a lot of time down in Pembrokeshire, which was great. Yes. But I haven't for a bit. So getting out there again would be great.
Yes.
So looking forward to it this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. This leads slightly on to the topic of conversation. The reason this interview is happening at all is that Simon sent me a lengthy voice note off the back of my Nova first impressions video, where he was commenting on the kind of current, I don't know, culture inside kayaking, I suppose, the current sort of cultural moment, if you can call it that, of the popularity of the half slice that isn't a half slice. Is that the right way of saying it, maybe?
Or
a half slice that is not being used as a half slice. Because half slices are the thing to have. I suppose the question is, what do you mean?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there is an element of fashion, I think, about some of these boats. And before I say anything much at all, I want to kind of establish that I'm not dissing on any of the manufacturers or the developments, because I think that considering the size of white water as an industry is tiny compared with mountain biking or surfing.
Yes.
We are actually incredibly lucky to have companies like Piranha and Dagger and whoever else developing and pushing new designs and trying new things out. So we are incredibly lucky to have that. So I'm not putting that down. You know,
such a broad spectrum of companies as well.
Yeah.
You know, you think for such a small sport, actually, there are what, maybe a dozen?
Yeah.
relatively large companies that produce at least one or more designs of different kinds. That is quite a spectrum. Granted, there are definite overlaps between different companies, but they do, generally speaking, bring something. They have a niche, don't they?
Otherwise
they wouldn't still be on the market. You're absolutely right. We're not aiming to bash on people. Every company has had its good designs, and every company, I'm sure, would admit that they've had their bad designs.
For sure.
You know, maybe we can talk about some of those elements without being disparaging. You very rightly in your voice note to me, you said you want to bring some sanity to this conversation, this topic.
And
I would hope we could bring a little bit of grace as well, and just be sensitive and be gentle with people, but also be like, well, this is a fact. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
I think a lot of the sort of the origination of where I was coming from is, you know, I know people who will chop and change their boats a lot. Mm-hmm. and when a company launches a brand new boat and they've done all the marketing for it, suddenly you see like a load of them on the river.
That's the hype purchase.
You get the hype purchase. And I do wonder sometimes, well, I don't wonder, I know sometimes that there are people out there who perhaps don't know what they really want from a boat. You know, so I know people who will paddle a boat for a very short while, and this is, you know, we were talking about this before we started recording, but, you know, getting to know getting to know the boat, you know, even if there might be aspects of it that you don't like.
Yes.
And I think there is this kind of tendency maybe to, there's a bit of Kool-Aid stuff going on, I think, with the marketing. You know, you see guys like Dane Jackson and Brent Orton and everything, and they're doing amazing work and making that boat look like, oh my God, that's going to transform my paddling.
Yeah,
I'm just going to be so much better. My booths are just going to work. I'm going to be flying off this.
And then you remember that those people could make a potato look good.
Exactly, so, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get the boat and it's like, you kind of maybe you get in it for a demo and it's like, oh, this feels great. But it's kind of a bit of a mixture there between what you've seen and what, you know, you're in that boat for the first time. And
how much of that is just a psychosomatic, oh, I want to like this.
I'm going to
tell my brain that I'm liking this and therefore I'm liking it. And you might also genuinely like it.
Yeah, I mean, there are some boats I do think that are genuinely good. I mean, I have to admit, when I demoed the Firecracker when it first came out, I had to engage my sensible brain because I did very nearly go straight back into the shop from where I got the demo and go, take my money. But it wouldn't have been the right boat for me. It wouldn't have been the right boat for me. So I held off. I pulled myself back from doing
restrained.
That.
Well done.
And it was the lovely blue one as well. Oh, that was
very nice.
Yeah, but yeah, I think maybe there's like people feel pressure. I don't know, but I do think there's an element of not getting the right boat for the right person. So again, I think I spoke about how you would have half sliced boats and then the person who paddles it never ever uses that tail ever. Never gets used.
Yes.
And you know, I don't know whether there's an element of, well, if I wanted to, I could start using it. It's there if I want it. I don't know. I'd be interested to know what you think.
Well, and it's interesting, isn't it? That I think you're right. There is a general, maybe unfair. There are a significant number of people who will buy a half-sliced boat, but they won't engage in any level of three-dimensional play on the river.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned in your voice note, you mentioned about the idea of someone, you know, going to a local weir. And the weir is shallow, so all you can do is flat spin, and you've got yourself a full slice because, you know, that's a playboat, so you can playboat in it. But actually, you could just as well be in a creek boat and you would learn all the same things and do all the same tricks and possibly do them more successfully and stably because you haven't accidentally got water piling up on top of you at certain points if you make a mistake. So critically, maybe. Who knows? But I think you're right. There is that kind of proportion of purchasers, let's say, boat users, who, for a whole host of different reasons, might not be engaging with the full functionality of that boat. I mean, you could probably argue that for all of us. Like, anyone who isn't Brent Orton, for the sake of argument, probably isn't engaging fully with the functionality of their kayak. Because, reality check, most of us don't paddle every day of the year.
Exactly.
You know, reality is that majority of UK paddlers are weekend warriors.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting out maybe twice a week, if we're lucky, in the winter. And then through the summer, if you're fortunate, you live near a white water centre and you're getting out during the weeknights, maybe, who knows. If you're not, you're paddling on the flat or in the surf or whatever you can get. But you're certainly not getting on the river very frequently. So the reality is majority of people are maybe putting in 20 to 30 days on the river in a year. Therefore the possibility of engaging fully with a design is just not there. So people don't have the time, they don't have the ability in that sense. Fitness might also be a factor, so they might not have the capability, the capacity, but then there's also the question of the trends driving people's willingness to engage with that as well.
Yeah.
Because another reality check, trying to engage with a boat takes time.
Yes.
And it takes effort.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think, yes, there's probably that element of all of those factors combining. And I would hazard to say that the time element is the most crucial one.
Yeah.
Which mean that you have this great proportion of people who simply don't sit with a boat or sit in a boat long enough, don't invest the time, rightly or wrong, you know, for whatever reason, aren't able to invest the time to learn that boat.
Yeah.
And that leads to one of two things. It leads to either stagnation or frustration, and probably both.
Yeah.
And therefore people see a new design, the new trend comes, and they're like, great, I'll jump on the hype train because that's going to make me a better paddler.
Yeah.
Rather than the uncomfortable, difficult, no, I'm going to stick with this boat and I'm going to persevere with it and I'm going to allow it to teach me and make me better.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, yes, not all boats will do that. Some boats are literal potatoes and they won't teach you anything. But I think pretty much you could say for most modern half-slice designs, if you sit with it for long enough and you invest the time and you make the effort, you know, you practice dropping an edge and see what happens enough times, it's going to teach you things.
Yeah.
And it's going to teach you positive things, to be clear. Yes, but that willingness and that ability is a commodity, and it's a short supply commodity. I suppose would be my thought. The other thing that kind of comes to my mind as well is that not all half slices are created equal.
No.
And especially in the current trajectory of boat design that maybe we're seeing, is that you have out and out half slices, and you have half slices that actually practically have so much volume in the tail that maybe you can do a pivot turn in them if you're skilled.
Yeah.
But actually they're basically a river running / creek boat.
Yeah.
That just happens to have a bit of a squished tail.
Yes.
You know, Reactar is the case in point.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
This kind of strange hybrid, which doesn't, I will wait until I get my hands on one, hopefully, maybe, but it doesn't look like it's going to be a play boat in any kind of way. You know, you're going to have to find a really big seam to get that thing vertical.
Yeah.
Not even vertical. You're going to have to find something pretty chunky to even get it to, you know, to do a dip turn.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what do you think of that?
Well,
what's the point?
Okay. So just rewind just a little bit. So, you know, I was going to say, no, that's fine. You know, I could turn my half-slice argument on its head a bit with say a creek boat. So somebody buys a great big creek boat, but they're not running, you know, great big huge like waterfalls and steep creeks. And so it does literally come down to the right boat for the right person. So, you know, clubs will pressure a newcomer to move towards a certain type of boat. And so
which is why you spoke about, you know, clubs full of Machnos and things like that.
Or, you know, and sometimes you'll get people who are pressurized into getting, say, a low volume slicey boat because it will teach them stuff, but that person might not necessarily have that confidence to, you know, be able to sort of deal with that that side of things.
I've been guilty of doing that to people. Being like,
no, oh, I mean, I
learned in an axiom, so everyone should learn in a half slice. Stupid argument.
Yeah.
There are good things from it, but I digress. Yeah,
I'm guilty as charged.
Yeah.
But, you know, I will say that, you know, if you have a confident beginner who paddles a low volume slicey boat or a play boat or whatever from the off a lot, they do progress a lot faster.
Quickly. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not the solution for all people, is what you're saying, I suppose.
No, that's the thing. It depends entirely on the person, and that's where, you know, peer pressure and all the rest of it from clubs comes. Well, not just clubs, but just paddling friends.
Yes.
Because not everyone's in a club. So, you know, we have boats, as you say, like the reactor coming out, and I did kind of predict, because Karen Addison did a creek boat of a similar concept a long while ago, long before started.
Okay. Yeah.
I can't remember what it was called, but it was just designed so you could do stern dip turns, or just at least,
just about,
not even I don't think it's even about getting it fully submerged. I think it's just about creating that pivot point.
Yes.
Without, you know, it's and
you've almost got that, like the Ninja is a classic. Brilliant example of that design, isn't it? The Zet Ninja.
Yeah, and the horny potato.
The horny potato. You've got that kind of like wedge just behind the hips that it will sit back into and pivot on. Go on.
And you know, this is obviously, you know, it's designed for maneuverability, and this is what they're selling it on. And well, all the manufacturers who make this type of boat are selling them on. Mm. And if you can use it, it's great. But I do wonder, you know, how many people will buy it and will never use that ability at all. And you know, I have seen it referred to as a quarter slice, which is, you know, I can't remember who it is that I saw that coined that term.
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't overthink the technology, because actually the only one that really makes any sense is half slice, and everything else is kind of nonsense.
I mean, it's kind of like,
think full slice really should be double slice if we're calling half slice a half slice, you know. Anyway,
teardropped creaker.
Ooh, very
does that
nice.
Work?
Yeah, I like that. Teardrop creaker, I think that should take off.
I mean, I think it's going to be, you know, it's great to see a kind of experimentation and design for a creek boat, for sure, because for so long they have remained either, you know, one time they were getting bigger and bigger in volume, and then they were getting longer and longer, but the actual overall kind of shape wasn't really changing. You know, we're getting more rocker and all, but not the actual concept. The general concept was remaining quite similar. So it is good to see that is taking place. So, you know, the next generation of paddlers, you know, you get the youngsters who have the confidence, and they're probably going to make more use of this kind of stuff than a lot of them. Yeah. But as I say, it's about getting that right boat for the right person, and fashion does come into it, because I've one of the boats that I've always recommended for beginners who can only afford one boat, I need an affordable kayak that is, you know, it can do some really great stuff, is pretty high performance. I've always recommended a used Piranha Z1.
A fantastic design, yes.
It's one of Piranha's best designs that they've ever done. But I think in a lot of people's minds, it gets labelled as that club boat, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
A bit like the RPM, so it's kind of uncool.
Yeah. The RPM will never not be cool.
Well, no, it wouldn't. But you know, I think the said one's kind of sometimes seen in the same realm as that. What are those club helmets? You know, that you get given.
Very nice.
But you know, I defy anyone to, you know, if anyone thinks that the Z1 is uncool, or you know, or a bit of a club boat, you know, club style boat for just beginners or anything.
They need to get in a Z1.
They need to either get in it or just watch Chris Easterbrook in one, because and so that's that fashion aspect. It's like, I'm not going to have that boat because it's not.
But then you also said earlier, sometimes people don't know what they want or need. So what advice would you give, or what criteria would you say people need to have in their heads when they are hunting for a boat? What will help people to know what they want or need? Because if they're just following trends, then they can end up in this kind of realm of stagnation and frustration and, what do I do? Or I'm just going to grab the next boat that comes along.
So,
how can we how can we bring some sanity to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, your own paddling, everyone's own paddling is always going to be a constantly evolving thing. So the boat that is right for you today isn't going to be the boat that's right for you tomorrow.
Yes.
So I think it's about identifying what you really love about kayaking now. What is the thing that you are enjoying most about your boating? You know, have you, if you've just started and you're watching some freestyle guys throwing down and you'll go, wow, I want to do that. Well, then maybe some kind of play machine is going to be what you want. You know, and if you like bimbling down the river, if you love the scenery, you know, maybe class two is what you just love class two. That, well, then you need a boat that's gonna suit that environment. You know, you know, it's not going over all the time. You know, I think people forget that. I know a lot of people don't class grade two, class two as actual white water, but it's still that subset of you know, moving water, white watery stuff, and not everyone wants to be doing really hard rivers. And some people, you know, some people will never even paddle the upper Treren. They'll be, you know, forever on the lower you know, other similar rivers. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever.
Absolutely.
If you enjoy it, that's the main thing, you know? Yes,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And also, if people are saying that grade two is not real white water, then we need to spend more time on grade two.
I'll tell you what.
If you say grade two isn't white water, then you're not worthy of being on grade four.
I'll tell you what. Argument. Even experienced white water kayakers. I mean, and I'm definitely not. You know, I'm just a typical weekend warrior. Like I'm just, you know, take the occasional swim. You know, all the rest of it. So it sounds like I'm being kind of really egotistical when I say this, but what I would say, but I used to sort of, you know, dabble in the style, not competitively, but I used to love going to the practice sessions and even experienced whitewater boaters, if you consider yourself an experienced whitewater boater, get in any kayak, doesn't matter whether it's a plastic boat or a slalom boat, and do even a flat water slalom session or a slight moving water slalom session with a good gate setup.
Yeah.
And do it against the clock and see how well you do. And it will be really hard.
Yes. Really hard. Yeah.
Especially
even
if you're
just getting people to make attainments in grade two. You
know? Oh, the attainments, staggered gates are really hard to do.
Yeah.
Just that you're effectively making grade five moves on, you know, very easy white water. And
absolutely,
I always consider that I was, you know, I've never been a great white water kayaker by any sense of the imagination, but I was always at my best when I was going to the slalom sessions in the slalom boat that I had, going river running in my creek boat, and mucking around in my play boat.
Yeah.
When I was doing all three of those, I was just so much more confident in my ability to make moves and try stuff out and all the rest of it. And so I think mixing and matching in that way and trying something like that is really, really worthwhile.
Yes, totally. Totally. Yeah. Cross-disciplinary. The more you do, it informs everything else.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Couldn't agree more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that advice of think about what you're enjoying now, even if that will change in a year or two years time. I think that's spot on. Allow yourself to progress and evolve, but give yourself the best chance by thinking, okay, well, what's the thing that I'm focusing on now? What boat will help me achieve that? And that's a really great bit of advice.
Yeah.
On that, we've talked a little bit about trends and I suppose the reputation of boats and brands and how that comes about through the hype train. Do you think we might all be better off if we just switched off our feeds and just listened to our bodies while we were actually paddling for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean,
is that too strong?
Yeah, I don't know. It's well, I guess it's up to the individual, isn't it? I mean, I deem scroll like the best of them, you know. But but how do you keep an industry alive if there's no kind of, you know, communication? I mean, You know, we could all be, you know, it'd be easy to just, you know, we could take a leaf out of Daz Clarkson's book and just paddle a topo for like the rest of rest of our lives. But but you know, the industry still needs to keep moving in some way, otherwise there's never going to be any kind of advancements and stuff. But I think perhaps we need to pay a little less attention, you know, just, you know, we see the stuff and then go, okay, what does my rational brain think about this?
Yeah, you know? Rather than I see it and that must be me in the next 2 days. Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of like everything in moderation, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's probably good advice too. With me in the corner being the ascetic, being like, no, cut it all off.
I know.
Don't watch my videos. Incredible.
But I mean, just one other thing, you know, with the changing of the boat. You know, when you find, you know, we talk about making the most of a boat and finding its secrets and really spending time with it. I mean, I recently changed from a party Rexy to a Ripper 2.
Yeah.
And the reason I did that was because I love the Rexy. You know, I don't dislike the party Rexy at all. I actually really liked it as a boat. The problem is it had a totally different hull to a playboat. I'm paddling a playboat most of the time. So when I get in the riverboat, I always found myself. I always found myself having to adapt to it.
Yes.
There was another big reason why, and this is a practical reason, and that is I had a bit of a wet moment in Norway last year, and the guys who rescued my boat commented that it was really awkward to get the boat across the river.
The crab handles are a really awkward place on the Party Rexy, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Really, so that was up the tail.
Yeah. So that was one of my other reasons for changing the boat.
I mean, that is,
I just wanted something I could get into. Because, you know, have no adaption period and you know, obviously have better safety aspect with the handle positioning. And I tried all the different boats. I tried the Zion Slalom. I tried the Goat, which you've just looked at, and a couple of others, and the Ripper was the one that kind of clicked with me.
Yeah,
you know, the Zion Slalom, I loved it. It was so fast, but it felt like it had that kind of narrow aspect to my, similar to the way my Ripper One was. I had a Ripper One small when I was at the top end of its weight, and the Zion Slalom, I kept over edging it, and it's because I don't want that adaption period. I could get used to that edging and the subtlety of edging in that boat, but again, it would mean I'd have to adapt to it every time I was in it.
Yes.
Whereas the Ripper 2, it's just there. It has edges I'm familiar with.
And yeah, totally.
Just one thing on that, like you were talking about those different boats, and another thing that I've come across when I was in my party Rexy, I used to get people coming up to me in an eddy, and I've had a few people do this, and they've come up to me in an eddy while I'm sat in it, and they said, I don't like the party Rexy. I really hated it. I thought I didn't think it was a good boat. You know, if you feel that way,
keep it to yourself.
keep it to yourself. Yeah, because, you know, that person in that eddy that you're talking to, that boat might be their pride and joy. It might be the only boat they can afford, and they're having a great day on the river. Totally. And then having somebody come along and say, "Oh, I didn't get on with that boat."
Not my fault.
It just totally ruins their day. Just don't do it. Just don't.
Totally. Yeah. That's very good advice.
It was a bit of a random piece of, but yeah.
No, I think that's a really helpful piece of advice just thrown in there. Thank you. Yeah. I think I'm probably guilty of doing that a lot. So it's good to hear. Yeah, no, it's interesting. I've had a lot of people, you know, a lot of people make suggestions. I guess I asked for them, so that's fair enough. But a lot of people made suggestions of a lot of different boats. And yeah. I think realistically, probably, I could have tried any of them at some point and been like, wow, this boat's great. And been taken. And I think, you know, I've ended up with the GOAT because Yuri's very kindly sent me that one as a kind of stopgap. I'm sitting with it, and I think I'm going to take my own advice with it, because to me it's falling more into that kind of fat tailed half slice realm. It definitely isn't as playful as the other boats that I have been familiar with using, certainly not with the Ripple One, but I like a challenge. And I really Whacker outfit is just so good. Like, molded in thigh grips are one of probably the best design choices, I think, of any modern boat. And those Whacker ones specifically, the way that they just cup and you can just drive the boat with your legs is just fantastic. I'll sit with it for now. Until someone literally forces me into a Ripper 2 that's the correct size for me, and then maybe I'll have my mind blown.
Yeah. I have to say, I mean, I love most of the Whacker boats, but the GOAT didn't really suit how I kind of am. But I do love the outfit. I used to be a big fan of the, because I used to have one of a Blistic boat, and I used to love, I've had a couple of Blistic boats, but
yeah.
I love the way that you could, that pally case slot, you can just put us.
Oh, that's great as well. Yeah, the fact you can get a throw line and a water bottle in next to each other.
Yeah.
Genius.
It's fantastic. And like, you know, I've no idea why it's never been kind of copied in any way.
Yeah, No, it's a great bit of design, I think. Yeah.
So you've got two boats.
Yeah.
No. So this is what I was thinking about this earlier on. I still think that three boats is the sweet spot.
I would agree with you, as long as for me that third boat is a long boat.
Okay.
Well, it's tricky. I think living where I live now, I would be hard pressed to choose
surf boat.
To choose surf between boat. Surf boat or long boat. Yeah.
No, I think it is surf boat.
Yeah, I know, but I just, the idea of getting a long boat out on the limb is still just so, so tempting to me. I'd still very much like to do that at some point. I'm hoping that one day it will happen. I got a chance to have a proper look at a Vanguard, the Dagger Vanguard, when I was out in America last year. And if they made that in the UK, I would be giving them my money straight away. I think it just looks like the perfect longboat. You know, I loved the green boat. I had one, I used one in America for 3 months training for the green race and doing the green race. And then I came home and I immediately bought a green boat. And I loved that boat. And I'm like partially gutted that I sold it. At the time, I felt like it was the right decision. That and my RPM both went together. Silly choice. The Vanguard, I think, just they've hit that sweet spot of like modern boat design and taking the lessons learned from the green boat and just shoving them together. It looks phenomenal. And in a way, like, I, you know, the 12R I think is good, but I think the fact that the Vanguard seems to be catered more to a slightly sort of medium to smaller size paddler. I think that'll be the one for me if they ever brought them over to the UK. But I don't think it's going to happen.
So here's another question then. So if someone we're talking about like a three boat quiver, so is it better? So we're talking about like paddle development, kayak skill development. So is it better to have a variation of a different type of boat on the same type of water, or a completely different discipline boat?
I personally would say a different discipline. Just keep things interesting for yourself in terms of progression.
Yep.
Yes, you will probably end up having more of those adaptation moments and yep. having to switch between one or the other. You know, if you're getting from a surf boat into a white water boat, then you're having to, one way, yep. you're remembering that suddenly you've only got one edge in the water at a time rather than both. And, you know, those sorts of factors. Yeah, but I think I would always go with cross-discipline as much as you possibly can.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. But then, at the same time, I suppose that is great. It's blurred, isn't it? Because, you know, you could cross-discipline from an old school or a full-slice play boat into a creek boat on the same river.
Yeah.
Potentially at different water levels. And you're gonna gain things, and you're definitely crossing disciplines, despite the fact that they are both white water boats.
Yeah,
I guess. But yeah, so I'd say yes and.
Yeah, yeah. It's because I was looking at an article on the CKS blog,
yeah, yeah.
And he was talking about this and. Having a great big quiver of boats and then finding he was hardly ever taking out any of the boats. He said there was even a bird's nest growing in one of the boats.
Yeah.
And I've kind of found that myself sometimes. I've gone through periods where I've had more boats than I really should. I'm probably at that stage at the moment, to be honest. But
we've all been there.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, you know, now I have more multi-discipline boats.
Mm.
You know, I have that surf boat, for example. And nothing compares with that boat once it catches a wave. It's yeah. just,
yes.
oh my God. oh my yeah, God.
Totally.
So I was watching the video that you put out once and you were in a plastic surf boat. Have you been in a composite one yet?
No, I haven't. I've done a wave ski, which was a fiberglass wave ski.
Oh, I remember seeing that. Yeah,
the speed of that is incredible. I would love to get that on a slightly larger wave.
Yeah.
I haven't had an opportunity. Just this winter has been mental. But yeah, yes. I still haven't been persuaded into a carbon surf boat. I think if I do, then that will be a dangerous day for my wallet.
Yeah, yeah. It is addictive. I think. I mean, I have to admit that I do often find I like the sea better than rivers a lot of the time.
Mm.
There's just something about the sea environment that is just nice, and especially if you get one of those days, you know, bluebird skies and stuff, and between catching a wave, you can just sit there and just bob about, and you've just got this amazing environment that you can sit in.
Yeah,
it's just
totally.
It's totally. Wonderful.
Yeah. No, I think I agree with that. Yeah. In terms
yeah.
of, well, I love the river environment as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I, as someone who grew up on the sea, there's always a part of me that's drawn there, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, I mean, it's something that sort of popped into my head when we were talking about sort of boat design and the advancement of the boat design.
Mm.
And, you know, we've seen this kind of advancements in play boat, not in play in creek boat design with this new, we'll call it the teardrop creeker now.
I like that. Yeah,
that's going to be the one.
Hashtag teardrop creeker, make it happen.
So what do you think is going to happen in terms of freestyle boat design? Where can that go?
Teardrop freestyle boats, I guess. gosh, that's a good question. I wonder whether we're now in a realm where the design is not going to change that much, but process and manufacture is the thing that's going to alter. Whether that is moving into more sustainable things, I think that's probably something that most kayaking companies are thinking about a little bit and need to be thinking about. You know, we're unquestionably not a, despite the fact that kayakers are, I would usually say, fairly motivated to be environmentally conscious as a sport, the things that we wear and the things that we use are not. So I suppose that's probably an element of it. That's not really an answer to your question, but it's a thought. But then I suppose also, you know, materials technology on a kind of small scale. I'm not an engineer. I'm a linguist. Don't ask me questions about this sort of thing. What I think is probably what materials are being used to, you know, add stiffness to your playboats, to, you know, like, how can you, well, yeah, that's the limit of my expertise.
I was watching, did you see the recent clip of Ben Higson winning one of the NFL rounds recently?
Oh, no, I missed that.
For anyone who's watching in America, NFL isn't football or
NFL
whatever
it is. It's not football. It is the finest competition known to man, the Nottingham Freestyle League, which is probably, I would argue, a better competition than, you know, Worlds.
I would definitely agree. I would definitely agree with that. So Ben Higson, they held it in Inletgate, and he is doing some absolutely insane combos.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's just almost one continuous movement. His run, it's just one move. And so I was wondering, you know, how the freestyle kayak design can kind of interact with that kind of combo movement. Is there room for design that actually makes the linking of those combos easier in some way?
Perhaps, but I suppose that comes down to your trade-off between volume and sliciness, I suppose, doesn't it? Which is probably something that over the course of the last 20 years, you know, we've gone from the full sliciness to the full-on potato, you know, volume and nothing but volume. Case in point, the 2013 Jackson Star series, which is just round.
Well, yeah,
then since then it's kind of gone to a sort of combination of both, hasn't it? A kind of tapering and,
well, it has, and
playing
then,
with look, where that volume is distributed, and
I mean, it's interesting looking at the volume distribution of the Rockstar 5 and how that differs to like the 2016, which it looks very similar to. And I actually find it easier to put on end than the 2016, even though the 2016 looks like it should be easier.
Yeah,
but then we can look at boats like the Ozone, which, you know, guys who know what they're doing with freestyle, like Brad Orton, whatever, that they can pull off pretty much every move they know in an Ozone.
Yeah, totally.
Even though you look at it and you'd think that shouldn't really be able to do that, but it can.
Yes, I mean, the Ozone, that's another interesting one, isn't it? Because the Ozone actually doesn't sit in any of those categories. You know, it doesn't sit in the kind of full slice category. It doesn't sit in a half slice category. It doesn't sit in playboat category, really. It's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's probably more on the playboat end. It's just, it's a Jed that they've just added some slice to.
Yeah, or is it a Z1 that
they've squished? Exactly. It's kind of sat in that kind of funny realm on its own. But it's interesting that no other company has tried to emulate that or do something that rivals it. Because I think it's a cool boat.
Yeah.
And, well, I don't know. I don't see very many of them around.
No,
but
I can't
imagine that that's because they aren't popular. I think it's probably just that people keep holding them.
It does have an unnerving habit, I find, though, of the nose behaving a bit like a spoon. If it purls, it really loves to get. There was one wave I was sitting on, and literally just, you know, if you hold a spoon up against running water, it gets sucked in like an aircraft wing. So it literally just got clamped on the rock that was forming the wave. So it was there, and he's boom.
And then the water's just straight into your face.
Yeah, yeah, just stuck there. Like, so yeah, it's yeah. But otherwise, I thought it's a great thing. But you were, so you were talking earlier, you know, about boats that perhaps are, if we're not going to be disparaging, what boats would you say are ones that you have found that didn't really gel with you?
I think I had a real, like, I had a real phase where I lived in an RPM. And I said earlier, I love the RPM. I do love the RPM. I think if I had not sold my RPM, I would have probably ended up a happier man. But I don't, I say that, I don't really regret selling it, because I found that the RPM being so round hulled was one of the factors that was causing stagnation in my paddling.
Okay.
You know, not having edges to interact with meant that I would get into a boat with edges and I would just be falling over all the time, because I just neglected that entire use of my lower core.
Did you ever use a red line?
I have sat in a red line once. I tried to use a K1 red line as a C1 on one occasion. That's my experience with a roll mat between my legs as a
C1. Okay.
Yeah.
I tend to find there's like there's two clubs. There are red line fans and there are RPM fans, and they don't mix.
There's no question. I think. I mean, it's one of those ones where, like, you know, it's got a huge cult following, hasn't it? I almost wore my RPM t-shirt this evening. I felt like, you know, but yeah, I think anything with a round hull or too round of a chine, I'm a little suspicious of. I think the correlation between paddlers who end up in that kind of stagnation frustration cycle and paddlers who are in a Piranha Machno, for example, or like a Hefe, you know, a boat of that nature that is just like a round boat, or an original Dagger Nomad, you know, like you're in a boat like that, and then the correlation is just quite stark, I found.
Okay, so have you ever tried a slalom boat?
I have. I did do slalom a little bit at university, K1 and C1. And yes, I know they're round, but they're also flat. Okay, but but no,
that's surprisingly tricky. Surprisingly tricky. Surprisingly tricky boats.
Agreed. Yes. Yeah. And I think that slalom boats they just behave differently anyway, don't they?
Very, very differently. They're rounded, but they behave like they have an edge that wants to trip you up.
I suppose it's because you've got so much of that top edge, which is sharp, really sharp, in the water all the time.
Yeah, and that tail is so long. That rail,
that rail on the tail is engaging the whole time.
Yeah,
and if you're not actively doing something with it, it's doing something with you.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone who hasn't paddled a slalom boat, it is like getting in a Formula One car. So a Formula One car, most people couldn't drive it because they can't drive it fast enough to even keep the engine going. I find a slalom boat is very similar in a cartwheel. They want to be driven. You know, they want to go fast. Nothing else.
Yeah.
If you drift in them, then you're going to fall over.
Yeah.
So can I mention a boat that I've absolutely hated?
Go on.
Yeah. It's an old boat, so I don't think anyone's going to be offended.
It's fine.
the Dagger Juice.
Oh, the juice. And yeah, I you know what, I agree with you.
it might be for different reasons. I kind of was okay with the hull, but I couldn't sit in it. I wanted to really like it, and when I took it down the river, at one point I was pretty much just taking all the outfitting out of it as I was going down the river. There was nothing I could do to get this boat to be comfortable in any way, shape or form. It completely cut off my blood supply to every part of my body. And in the end, I was just like flopping around in this boat because I had nothing, no padding or anything in it because I just took it all out. So yeah, that's my hate boat. Of
I think that's reasonable. Yeah, I mean, looking back on it, I think it's one of those boats that's just a little bit ugly as well, isn't it?
Like, yeah, I think it knew what it wanted to be.
No,
really.
It didn't know. I was about to say exactly that. Like the fact that it's like it's a full slice, but the tail is fat, and the front of it is so squashed that your feet hurt. Like something's wrong there. There should never be more volume behind you in a boat than there is in front of you.
It's kind of like a reverse slice boat, maybe. Yeah. Is that what it? Yeah,
it's like the perfect bow pirouette boat and nothing else.
Yeah, it's
kind
of.
No, we said we weren't going to rag on anything. We've really ragged.
No, we weren't. But okay, so here, I'm just going on for this. So here's another one. So, is there a boat that you remember loving, but then you've gone back to paddle it now? And you've wondered how on earth you managed to like it at all?
Ooh, that's a great question. See, this is where I'm betrayed by the fact that I actually haven't paddled that many boats. Yes, okay.
You know what?
So, but this is just because I've become a larger human being. I loved the Dagger Axiom 8 because I had one. That was my first ever boat. Fantastic design. I absolutely love the Axiom. I still do. I think it's probably one of the best half slice designs still. And I think probably would hold its own. Granted, less rocker than a lot of the modern designs and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's now 15 years old. But I think it paved the way for a lot of the modern designs that we have. However, a Dagger Axiom 8 is now a squirt boat for me.
Okay.
Like,
right.
I could not use it as a river runner as I did as a teenager.
No.
Oh, maybe God. Not in the same.
Well, yeah.
Maybe
I
not
mean,
in the same category, but still, it's yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, mine is the G-Force. I used to love my G-Force,
yeah.
And I've been back in one, and I've just, oh no.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because the G-Force is like the ubiquitous club playboat.
Yes.
Like in the mid-2000s, everybody had a G-Force.
There's a guy at one of the clubs locally who I am absolutely convinced will be a name in freestyle. He has got everything going there.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's in a G-Force at the moment. But I mean, the guy is absolutely incredible because he's throwing bow stores and cartwheels and stuff in this G-Force. But he'd never really tried a modern playboat.
Yeah.
So I got him in one of the Jackson Rockstars, and he's one of these guys who's tall but light for the boat.
Okay,
so it's quite hard to get the ends down.
Yeah.
But he got in this modern Jackson, and immediately his technique was so down that he was just took him a couple of goes, and then he was just on it.
Incredible.
So I think that's kind of a lesson that you can kind of, even if you only have access to a retro boat, if that's all that you can get hold of,
yeah,
you can still do a ton load of stuff in that boat.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very, very true. Very true.
You show that with your neck. You haven't sold your neck, have you? Is it a Necky that you have?
No, my Prion Delirious.
Prion.
Yeah, that was one of the two. That and my Gigi together have become my Nova. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, the Delirious, I was always too small for it. And I didn't really realise or come to terms with that until sort of the last year when I was like, oh man, I'm like, this is... I rattle around in this, and I always have now I think about it. So I think that was a long process of realization, which is sad because I love the Delirious. It's a fantastic design. Like, I would argue the Delirious is probably one of the all-time best designs of a boat, period.
I haven't seen many of them about, so
yours is one of the... they are worth their weight in gold now. Yeah. Oh, it's a great design. I can't fault anyone for trying to get hold of one. They're great.
No.
Yeah. And as you say, you know, if you can get to learn stuff in a boat like that, and then you'll get in a modern boat and you will fly.
Yeah.
No question about that. No question.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah.
Simon, I've got one more question.
Go on. Shoot.
What is the place that you are scheming to paddle next?
Well, I don't really have any place I'm scheming to paddle next. Because
scheming or dreaming? There we go.
Dreaming. Well, I've kind of got that coming this year. I'm going back to the Socha. I just love Slovenia. Absolutely love that. And it's been quite a few years since I've been there. And I've been trying to get back there for a while. This year we're going out there. And going to have a great time because it's just the most stunning place.
Yeah.
And
incredible. Yeah. Will that be Ripetu territory then?
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a possibility of going somewhere else later in the year, but I haven't quite finalised any plans for that just yet. I'm kind of wing things quite a bit at the moment. So yeah,
that's good. That's good. Incredible.
What about yourself, though? Are you
I think
going back to the States or anything?
At the moment, I've had such a long stint of just paddling in the UK. America last year was a bit of an exception. That was the first time I've left the UK to go kayaking in 5 years. I definitely have a bit of an itch to go and do something that's a little bit adventurous and expedition-y. Very much pondering returning to Madagascar. I know how much we left undone out there when I was last there, and I know how much cool stuff other people have since gone and opened up, and would love to go and explore some of those rivers as well. So that's definitely an itch, but then there's also part of me that is just craving big, possibly slightly scary white water, but stuff that everyone knows about and has done before, so I'm not like terrified that we're gonna get lost in the jungle on a first descent. So I think Cali next year might be calling potentially.
I like the
idea of some granite. We'll see.
You don't want to go out to was it Papua and try and find Chris Easterbrook's shoes? But,
Again, jungles. Jungles are Mind you, give me a Southern Hemisphere expedition any day over a Northern Hemisphere one. People who do Northern Hemisphere expeditions are just another level of hardcore.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm not expedition material myself. I think it's one of my freaky things. I think being stuck out in the middle of nowhere and
That's fair. It's another thing that's a little bit like the surfing. I think there's a certain level of addiction of that kind of desire to be at the edge of yourself, I suppose. Maybe that's not healthy. I don't know. Oh dear. Well, on that note, thank you so much, Simon. This has been really great. Hopefully that has brought some sanity. And we only ragged on two boats, so I think we get away with that. If you've enjoyed watching this and you'd love to see some more interviewee style content, then please do let me know in the comments down below. If you're seeing this for the first time and you've enjoyed it, then and you've stayed around this far, then thank you very much. Hopefully some people maybe have had this on in the background while they've been doing other things just listening. That'd be awesome if you've done that. But if you're here for the first time, then please do consider subscribing and hit that notification bell so that you are informed when new videos come on out. Hit that like button and let us know where in the world you are listening or watching from. yeah, look forward to seeing you in the next one. Thank you so much, Simon. See you in the next one, everybody. Yeah.